This evening, I would like to pick up some of the themes that have been coming up in the group interviews. And also Jenny have spoken of them in her talks. And I would like to connect them, somehow giving them shape and present them together. And the general theme is going to be the attitudes in practice. Attitudes in practice. Which, for me, it is a very important theme. A very important thing to pay attention to. The attitude we bring to practice. For me, it is as important or more important than the practice that we do. More important than what we do, how we do it. It can be part of our investigation, actually, the attitude we bring to the practice we are engaging with. The attitudes we bring to our in our everyday life. And I tell you, what you do in your practice, the attitude you bring in your practice, actually is a reflection of the attitudes you bring to your life. I have found for myself that my practice has been like a mirror of what I do in my daily life. So it's quite illuminating bringing your attention, your investigation to the attitudes in practice. And I'm going to start with one that has been mentioned actually a few times. It's one of our favorites. And it is the attitude of non-striving. A theme that has come up quite a lot in the group interviews. Non-striving. So important in this culture of achievers, of strivers. It's kind of counter-cultural, saying do not strive, or bring this attitude of non-striving to the practice. Because it seems that if we don't strive, we don't progress. We don't go anywhere where we want to go. We associate striving with that, with progress, making progress. The more we strive, the sooner we get to the destination we want to reach. But actually, with the practice of meditation, is counterproductive, this striving. And the Buddha was very aware of that, actually. He was so aware of the importance of this that one of the elements of the Noble Eightfold Path is dedicated to this theme. The sixth of the eight elements, the Eightfold Path, is right effort. To apply the right effort in your practice. Not too little, not too much. Just the right one, the right effort. And this is easier said than done, of course. Much easier to say than to do it. Because there are no recipes. There is not a manual for us to know what the right effort is. We need to find out for ourselves, as we do. When we are falling short, when we are doing too much. And images are very, to me, very helpful. And the image, to me, of holding a foil? The sword you use to do fencing? Is that a foil? Yeah? To holding a foil, for example. You need to hold it with the right strength. Too soft and it doesn't serve to for anything. It can drop even from your hand. Too tight, you cannot use it also properly. It lacks fluidity, capacity of movement. It has to be the right effort applied to holding that tool. The same with the practice. In whatever you do, the way you hold your body, for example, with the right effort, so you can have your body upright, but soft at the same time, not tight. There is an art in that, in holding the body in that way. Holding an object in your attention, the same. With the right effort. Too loose and we lose the object easily. Too tight and there is an agitation there. The right effort. And the way we hold the practice as a general thing. Not to be sloppy, but not to overdo it. Not to overdo it. And actually, being able to learn to relax. For me, that's been a big learning over the years. I was one of those strivers I was referring to. Confession here. And really, really, the first time I went to a retreat, the first time ever I went to a retreat, a Zen retreat in the mountains in Andalusia. When I came back home, I said, I'm going to go for enlightenment. I'm really going for it. I bought a cushion and I made a promise to myself. I'm going to sit every day. Every day. At least half an hour, but aspiring to 1 hour. And for years, I didn't miss one sitting. I mean, it was such a big determination I had. Which I think is beautiful, but there was a lot of striving there. And I realized that as the practice progressed. And actually, it helped me to understand that a little story in the Zen tradition. You know, the Zen tradition is a very beautiful tradition and has these stories of masters offering lessons to the students in very peculiar ways. This story is about a novice who enters into a monastery, a very earnest practitioner who sat in meditation almost continuously. Yeah, very earnest, dedicated, going for enlightenment. Yeah, I'll make it. And the master saw that student day after day. And one day the master went with a brick and a piece of sandpaper. And he sat in front of the student and started to polish the brick. Also day after day. Until the student couldn't hold it any longer. And one day asked, why are you rubbing the brick every day? What's the purpose? And the master said, I want to make a mirror. And the student said, but that's impossible. No matter how much you rub and polish the brick, you will never be able to make a mirror with a brick and a sandpaper. And then the master replied, likewise, from much that you sit and meditate, you will never get enlightenment. You will never become a Buddha. To me, that was a powerful story, very powerful. What I interpreted is that it's not just about sitting in meditation and putting a lot of effort. You need to apply the right effort, but you also need to jump out of a cushion and practice in daily life. And there is also another story I wanted to tell you about relaxation. About learning to relax. And it is the story of Ananda. And if you are not familiar with the early Buddhist history, Ananda was the attendant of the Buddha for, was it over 20 years? And so very loved by the Buddha, very loved by the community. He had an incredible memory and remembered all the discourses of the Buddha. So he was a key figure in the community, especially when the Buddha died. And then the circle of students, of disciples, that had gained enlightenment gathered in a council. They wanted to agree on a canon of teachings of the deceased master. But even though Ananda remembered all the discourses of the Buddha, he wasn't invited to that gathering. He wasn't invited to the council. Why? Because he was not enlightened. He hadn't made it yet. Poor him, poor little thing. But he resolved to gain enlightenment in that night before the council, so he could make it and participate. So he really gave himself to the practice with a lot of zeal. And it says that I think the day was breaking and he hadn't managed. Maybe out of desperation, very tired, he decided to have a little rest. And as he was lying in bed, before his head hit the pillow, crack, he woke up. He made it. Just in that moment of relaxation. Sometimes when I lie in bed, I think, maybe now. So again, maybe a powerful message there. Maybe a powerful message. Sometimes less is more. Sometimes we gain more by doing less and by learning to relax. So I hope that Zen Nobis learned the lesson. I suppose he learned it, and he became and he started practicing off the cushion, and considering the practice of meditation more open, and wider than sitting in meditation. Actually, Jenny referred to this, the term that we understand that was translated as meditation is bhavana. And bhavana, as she explained, means cultivation. bringing something to being, to cultivation. One of my teachers, Christina Feldman, who was also Jenny's teacher, I used to say, we are always cultivating something. We are always cultivating something. Always. Always. But either we cultivate things unconsciously or we cultivate things consciously. And if we are conscious, we can decide what to cultivate and what not to cultivate. I don't know if you, you probably have heard this saying, sow an act and reap an habit, sow a habit and reap a character, and sow a character and reap a destiny. What we do is shaping us. What we do is shaping us. And not just what we do physically, our actions, our behavior. Even what we think is shaping our mind. And then that is going to have an effect on the shape that our life takes. There is a In the Majjhima Nikaya, and one of the books in which suttas of the Buddha are collected, the Buddha was explaining to a group of practitioners, whatever you frequently think and ponder upon, that will become the inclination of your mind. Whatever you frequently think and ponder upon, that will become the inclination of your mind. Even when we think we are cultivating something, a tendency of the mind. And that tendency of the mind to entertain certain thoughts or intentions, then are going to be expressed in the world by our actions or inactions, our words, and will have an impact in the people around us. So yes, just to remind you of that, of meditation. Bhavana is not just about sitting on a cushion and trying to gather your attention on a meditation object, which is, of course, important and necessary. But we need to make our life part of our path of investigation and cultivation. So, another attitude that I think it is crucial and that comes also very frequently in the group meetings, that is the attitude of acceptance. Acceptance. That we are not looking for the perfect state of mind or the perfect conditions in our life to really be at peace. The only way we can experience peace is by accepting what is. To me, peace is not the absence of difficulty. but they're not struggling with reality, with life. So even if the perfect state of mind arises, which from time to time arises and is really lovely and we have to celebrate it, or the perfect conditions in our life manifest from time to time, again, really, really something to appreciate, they will not last long due to the characteristic of reality called impermanence. So what we need to develop in this imperfect world is that capacity to accept. To accept what is happening right here, right now. In your body, in your heart, in your mind. Non-acceptance is this struggling with wrestling with life. And that's another way we can name aversion. And aversion with craving, which is the opposite side of aversion, is the cause of so much unnecessary suffering. So much unnecessary suffering. We can spare so much unnecessary suffering by accepting. By accepting. And I want to just mention one of the misgivings of acceptance, one of the mistakes that normally we can, or misconceptions of acceptance. Because acceptance doesn't mean resignation. Acceptance doesn't mean that we have to put up with things that are not okay. There can be a misconception. Acceptance is just to put up with whatever. Everything is fine. And I don't think that's the message at all. I don't think that's the message. We have, as human beings, a drive, an aspiration to grow, to express our potentialities. We have a drive for bringing beauty and love into this world. We have an aspiration for justice in our communities, in the world. And that's something to be respected. We aspire, we have those beautiful aspirations. Sometimes we need to make changes in reality. But before trying to make any change, it is crucial to accept the situation as it is in this moment. Crucial. So I like this quote by Theodore Roosevelt. Do what you can with what you have where you are. Do what you can with what you have where you are. To me, what I interpret here is he's speaking of this drive of that all human beings have of making the best of ourselves, of our life, of our communities, of the world. And in each situation, we should aspire to do what we can with what we have in the place and situation we are. But before we embark on that endeavor, we need to fully accept. If not, we are coming from aversion. And that is not going to bring very good outcomes. And I'm going to follow up the attitude of acceptance with another one that is very, very much related to acceptance. And it is letting go. The quality of letting go. Again, it comes very, very often in the group meetings. And in these teachings, letting go. Because once we have accepted, and then once we have done all that we humanly could do to change a situation, we really need to let go of the expectation of the outcome. And this is very much applied to daily life and also to your meditation practice. We accept the state of our mind, of our heart, of our body, fully accepting it. And then we try to do something for it to change in the future. It's like planting seeds. It's not a demand. I want you to change now. We do something in order planting seeds for, you know, in the future, something different happens. And once we've done that, we let go of the result. We let go. Not easy. Not easy. Letting go of the demand of things to be the way we want them to be. So letting go is the opposite of clinging. Another term very, very much used in Buddhist psychology, clinging. Upadana. This clinging. This grabbing tightly onto something. To that expectation, that demand. Letting go would be just to release that grip. To release that. With the conviction we've done with the best of our abilities to change something. But we leave the results of that to life. It's a kind of surrender. Surrender to something bigger than us. Surrender to an intelligence that is bigger and greater than our little intelligence. That thinks that things should be a particular way. And we need to do this surrendering continuously. Because such ingrained tendency to demand things to be the way we think they should be. We think we know. We know best. So we need to bring this realization that actually, or this questioning, do we really know? Do I really know what is best? So the result, in any case, of what we want to change, the result of our actions, leaning in that way, is not in our hands. Not at all. See? Now I can hear my voice over there. Yeah. So this letting go leads us into another attitude that follows a letting go. And that attitude is the attitude of trust. The attitude of trust. Trust in our capacities, that we can really make a difference with our practice. We can make a difference. It's in our hands to make a difference. Over time, you know, it's something that is not going to happen, at least for most people, just immediately, over time. Trust in the goodness of our intentions, the goodness and the beauty of our intentions, trusting that as well, our deepest aspirations. Trusting what I said before, referring to letting go, trusting an intelligence that is bigger than our own little intelligence. Trusting the intelligence that is holding us, that is holding all life on this planet. Trusting that, and we are part of that intelligence. And trusting the echo of that intelligence inside of us. That voice, for example, that told us to embark on this path, to try out. Trusting that voice as well. Sometimes it is very quiet and we cannot hear it. It's important to create the conditions so we can listen to that voice better and more often. And that trusting is going to lead us into the next attitude, which is patience. That's also a hard one, isn't it? Patience. Because we want results and we want them now. Have you ever heard this prayer? Please, Lord, give me patience and give it me now. So hard, patience, so hard. Much more nowadays in which everything happens so quickly. We get impatient because whatever is delaying a few seconds. So if we are looking for quick results, very likely we are going to get frustrated quite soon. Because normally the things that are worthwhile in life, normally they don't come quickly. They don't come quickly. We need to create the conditions for them to come. Little by little, little by little. So, taking into account, for example, putting the example of our mind, taking into account that our mind has been conditioned by many years of a type of unhelpful training, and if you take into consideration our ancestry for millennia, our minds have been trained in an unhelpful way, that is not going to change overnight. We really need to take into account the scope of the thing. The scope of the thing. And I want to read you something here as well. It's a little verse from the Dhammapada, a collection of very ancient verses of the Buddha. And he said, "Think not lightly of good, saying, 'It will not come to me.' Drop by drop is a water jar filled. Likewise, the wise person, gathering it little by little, fills himself with good." Yeah. Do not think lightly of good, saying, "It will not come to me." Drop by drop is a water jar filled. In the same way, the wise person, gathering it little by little, fills herself with good. It's a powerful image. If you see a big water jug and a drop falling from time to time, you think it's not going to fill at all. But it is a question of time. You pass there next week or the following month and it filled. With the mind, it happens the same. If we really are constant and if we persevere in our practice, we will eventually change conditioning, tendency, habits, patterns in the mind and heart. You know, if you step once on a marble step of a staircase, it doesn't make any difference. But over time, over centuries, you can see it's eroded. Here in Gaia House, maybe not too much, but there is another place where Jenny and I teach in Sharpam, and you can see, have you noticed, Jenny, in the servant's staircase, you can see the dent of all those steps over centuries. And I remember when I went to Zaragoza, which is a city in the north of Spain, they have a virgin there in the cathedral. It's called the Our Lady of the Pillar, because it's a little virgin on top of a pillar. And the pillar is made of marble. And the pillar of marble is considered also sacred, and it's covered by silver and bronze, except for a little circle at the back. And the custom there from medieval times is that people pay reverence to the Virgin and then go back, and they go through the back of the pillar and they kiss in that little circle that shows the pillar made of marble. And I went there, and actually it is eroded. I mean, you can maybe fit a fist there, at least 5 centimeters. And that's by kissing. Now people pass and they kiss and continue. Imagine to erode a pillar made of marble by kissing. How many particles can you take from a kiss to a pillar of marble? But over time, all those people from medieval times, kissing, one kiss, another one, have made a dent quite noticeable on the pillar. I found that amazing. Amazing. And quite inspiring for the task we have in our hands. We can make a change. We can make a change over time with patience. With patience. And lastly, the last attitude I want to speak about is kindness and compassion. Kindness and compassion. The purpose of this practice is for kindness, for opening the heart and be able to be more loving and more compassionate. We need to bring kindness and compassion in our practice. This is the second full day we have spent here together. And by now, if it was your first retreat, now you know what happens on our retreat. All those different states of mind and heart that you have experienced in the last 48 hours. From those very lovely, very beautiful, that peace, that gratitude, that appreciation, that sensitivity. From those lovely states of mind and heart to the difficult ones. That boredom. That irritation. That anxiety. That loneliness, that desperation at times. You know, life is not easy and practice is not easy either. So we need to learn how to relate, especially to what is difficult in our practice and in our life. And the best way to deal with what is difficult, at least to start, is to bring kindness, to bring compassion, to bring mindfulness to bear to what is going on. There is here a difficulty, struggle. To realize that that's part of the human condition. We, all human beings, experience that particular state from time to time, and all the human beings that have preceded us, the same. We are not alone in our difficulty or our struggle. It's part of the share humanity. To be aware of that, we are not on our own. We all share that. And then to bring kindness to bear on us. We may want to ask the question, what do I really need to take care of myself now? It may be a kind word, it may be a kind gesture, it may be doing something nourishing for us. Really, we are learning the art of taking care of ourselves, taking care in a wholesome way of ourselves, bringing kindness and compassion. And I think in the spirit of kindness, I'm going to finish now. But before concluding this talk, let's sit quietly together for a few moments. Thank you for your attention and your engagement. And we have now a 20-minute period of walking meditation. And we'll gather here again for the last sitting at 8:45.
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.